Good evening, everyone. This is Harold Fisher, and this is the final installment of our special three-part series on the Daily Drum, Justice in Black and White, an examination of the issues that have come into focus since the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Tonight's focus is in over, minding your vote and your business. This program can be heard on 96.3 WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, WHUR.com, and streaming on all of our digital platforms. Tonight's program will be rebroadcast as the previous two at 10 p.m. on our sister station, WHUT-TV Channel 32. And like the previous virtual town halls, we're not taking any phone calls. However, you can join the conversation using the hashtag WHURFM. My guests are Dr. Michael Fauntroy, Associate Professor of Political Science at Howard University, Arisha Hatch, Vice President and Chief of Campaigns for Color of Change, and Maurice Weeks, Co-Executive Director of the Action Center on Race and the Economy. Also, we have George Frazier, who is the Chairman and CEO of the Global Networking and Economic Development Company, FrazierNet Incorporated. I want to thank all of you for participating in this really important conversation. Let me go right into this. This is for Dr. Fauntroy. How do we talk about the power of the protests and translating that into the power of the vote?
Well, essentially what you're talking about is how do we pivot from protest to politics? Because it's the politics that are going to determine the policies that will impact voters and citizens all over the country, in particular Black people. And so the energy that is being developed now around these police brutality protests must be transitioned into energy at the ballot box for voter registration in the interim and for getting out the word about particular candidates that are useful or particularly harmful to Black interests. So for me, as always, it's an education first component because people need to know what they need to know. And it's my hope that we'll be able to begin to move in that direction. It will be a real shame if the momentum that appears to be building right now is not capitalized on. And we all have a responsibility to play a role in that regard. But things are there for us if we get organized and make some noise at the ballot box this fall.
Mm-hmm. Arisha, to that point, this is a watershed moment in American history, in political history. And yet we've already, in the minds of some people, this was a coronavirus year for 2020. And now all of a sudden it's, you know, police brutality, Black Lives Matter. Talk to me about the attention span of, you know, the protesters and specifically America. Are we going to forget about this if things begin to die down in a month?
It's hard to tell. It's become cliche in a week to say that we're living through a pandemic within a pandemic as the Black community. And as someone that's been doing this type of organizing work for the last 8 years, who 2 weeks after starting working at Color of Change, watched as Trayvon Martin was murdered and did not receive justice. I have become accustomed to sort of this boom and bust cycle of attention that the media and that others give to victims of police violence and to victims of to Black victims generally. And we are also living in a very dynamic news environment where with one tweet, with one new occurrence, the world can change. And so, you know, we expect the story to shift. What I think is so powerful, what protesters and organizers in Minneapolis did, what organizers all across the country did, is that they gave George Floyd a window for justice that he would never have had. I think they've been out for over a week, 8 or 9 days. Folks in Ferguson protested for 2 weeks. And that's really all you can ask for in these sorts of moments.
Compared to the protests and demonstrations of the past, is this different Do you think this is different, Arisha, compared to, you know, the civil rights, you know, marches of the late 50s and the 60s? Is this the most unique protest that this country has seen for Black people?
It's definitely a transformational moment. I don't know that I'm ready right now to begin ranking where it fits in broader history. But I think what we've experienced at Color of Change, where over 5 million people have taken action in the last 3 weeks between the murder of Ahmaud Arbery to the murder of George Floyd, more people are on our side on this issue than ever before. I felt like the images that I saw coming out of places like Portland, Oregon and Idaho with, you know, all these white kids dying on the freeways. I don't know that I'd ever seen that before.
Yeah, and France and in London and other places.
Yes, yes. And so we, for a movement that has been critiqued about our lack of progress, we have actually made a lot of progress in terms of changing hearts and minds, in terms of the specificness of our demands in this moment, and our ability to actually hold people accountable.
Let's talk a little bit about the economics, more specifically the money. We have heard, and we have certainly seen during the protests, during the, the unrest, the businesses have been destroyed, not only in white communities, but in Black communities. And we were already in an economic pandemic with the shutdown of the nation's economy because of the coronavirus. And I'll start with you, Maurice. What does all of this portend for the economy going forward? Look, the unemployment rate, there was a big surprise. 13%, not 25%. What's going on here?
Yeah, just a quick note on that rate. The unemployment rate actually ticked up for Black folks, which is a concern. There Look, I think that not only were we in an economic crisis, we were heading for an economic depression. I mean, I think that we still are with the amount of things that were closed and, you know, how much we've let big business and private equity kind of run away with all of the rules in the economy. I think that we're still in really fragile shape. And those are things that really affect Black people, all people of color, but Black people in particular, really, really hard. So, we all probably have friends who are working multiple jobs or work in Lyft and work in Uber and working Instacart or something like that. There just has been, folks have been on the edge for a really, really long time. And that's not even to mention the housing crisis that we had before this and has been exacerbated by people's inability to make any money. In terms of the businesses, you're right, a lot of businesses were, their facades were destroyed and things like that. Most of the businesses that were destroyed, I don't really shed a lot of tears for a Target or something like that being destroyed, because they will recover all of that money with their insurance. I think that what people are protesting for, it's more than just the murder of George Floyd. It's more than just police murders in general. It also includes the fact that, the economic pathways for Black folks are just not where they should be if we're going to be in an equitable society. If we're going to do that at all, if these protests are going to stop, we're going to have to make some real changes to how we do the economy in this country.
Equitable society. let's talk a little bit about the money piece there, George. I've been hearing a lot of resurgence of conversation about reparations and what that looks like for Black people. And we're not talking about a $1,200 check with the president's name on it. We are talking about a wholesale look at what this means for Black people in its economy. Last night on NBC, Charlamagne the God was interviewed and he said, nothing good will come for America until America is does right by Black people. Does that mean economically? And what does that look like from your perspective?
Reparations will play a major role in the repair of what is now a huge disrepair of the economic state of Black people in this country. much of it driven by the need for financial education for all Black people. We may be the most financially illiterate people in America. And so I think we need to focus on that. This is a time to focus on, it's time to narrow in on understanding what I term as the four pillars for the intergenerational transfer of wealth. That is the proper management of accumulated wealth. That is the importance of real estate. What's the first thing God gave Adam? What's the first thing God gave Isaac? Real estate, real estate, real estate. The importance of business development. And every immigrant that has ever come to this country has understood the importance of entrepreneurship and creating work and jobs for their people, because that is the only way to raise up the poor. And we're moving in that direction. More and more Black people are opening businesses. We have small businesses, sole proprietorships. Many of those businesses after this tragedy will not return. Probably 30 to 40% of the small businesses, Black businesses in this country, 2.5 million, 2.6 million, about 111,000 of them employ someone. The average income of an employee-based Black business is about $1.1 million annually, but the average income or annual revenues of a small sole proprietorship is about $18,000 a year, which is below the poverty line. They have been devastated with this this pandemic. I think God works in mysterious ways, mm-hmm. and I see some good in this. And I see that, in fact, we have been put in a position that we now have to all sit at a table, sit in a room, and focus on skilling ourselves up, bringing our skills up, whether it's our financial literacy skills, whether it's understanding and studying and what can one do about moving reparations forward. I think there is more steam for that. There's a huge case for it now. It is public. And of course, we know that when white folks catch a cold, Black people catch pneumonia, right? So we are going to really suffer. We're suffering in the death rate on a percentage per capita basis as it relates to the pandemic. So all of this is coming into full view of the American public. And I think there is a changing of hearts, a changing of minds. I think this is a seminal moment. I think this may be the tipping point. And we now have to execute. And I've said many times on many platforms that I've talked on over the years, I've given over 3,500 speeches, written 6 best-selling books on this subject, that essentially we have wanted progress without execution. Now is the time to execute. As someone stated in this presentation, that at some point in time, all this is going to end, right? Yeah. Maybe a month. Right. It may be.
Let me talk about that execution, because, you know, once again, you know, and this is for you, Michael. How do we execute some form of reparations, of economic apology for Black people? Does it start with, you know, more donations to civil rights organizations or organizations like Color of Change? Are we seeing more of that? What do you think?
Well, I think we have to begin with how it would have to happen. It would require congressional action and a presidential signature. So what we're talking about is legislation and political behavior. And that is often informed by what's happening in the streets and in the suites around the country and whether or not people are sufficiently agitated. And if there's a crisis that sparks it. And so if those things are in place, be it through greater support for interest group organizations to help apply pressure, or just through the agency of individuals who will take the mantle and decide that I'm going to be more active in the political process to make sure that the things I want or the things that I think are important are actually acted upon and not just ignored, then we can potentially get there. But for me, it really is a question of voter turnout. And if Black people get organized and turned out in larger than usual numbers, then I think there is an opening for these kinds of reparations and other kinds of useful public policy. But until that happens, we're not quite in a place to do that. I will say, in sort of the underline something Dr. Frazier said, there does seem to be a big difference this time in terms of allyship. And we'll see if that is real or not. But if it is real, then I do believe that there is a broader coalition of people who are willing to push for what is right. And if that happens, then at that point, the door is open to a wide range of possible options.
Yeah, Harold, I agree with Michael 1,000%. Right now, the number one goal, certainly for Black people, but for America, I believe, is the good riddance of the person we have running the White House. That has to happen. If that does not happen, everything else is academic. We know that he is insane, all right? So it's not going to happen. And Black people must vote. We must vote. Even if you do not like both the candidates and you said, well, I don't like either one of them good enough, and I'm going to stay home, you have actually voted for Donald Trump, right? Mm-hmm. What they are trying to do is to repress the vote, right? So we must vote. We are an extraordinarily powerful force when we go to the polls.
Harold,
so we must, every Black person vote in the numbers we voted for Barack Hussein Obama in his first run. We must vote. That's critical. That's number one. We must get rid of this president, right?
Okay. I want to hear from Maurice, and then I have another question for Arisha to that point. Maurice, please go right ahead.
Yeah, just jump in here. And Dr. Frazier, I'm glad you mentioned Barack Obama. I mean, you won't get an argument from me that it's important to be engaged at the electoral level for all Black folks. Really, I think all folks, but certainly Black folks should be engaged. And you know, some of my very good friends were tear gassed and pepper sprayed on the streets of Ferguson when Barack Hussein Obama was the president, right? So there's more going on than just what happens at the ballot box. And I think that it's imperative on all of us to make sure I think it's imperative on all of us that we're dismantling the economic systems that create the realities that we're talking about. And it's imperative on all of our well-wishing white friends to get their cousins and make sure that we're actually dismantling white supremacy in this country. Because it's not just, it's not just the ballot box, although that's a key point. We have to get Donald Trump out. He is a Nazi. But we can't, even if we get Joe Biden or somebody else in, we're still left with some systemic and structural problems that we have to dismantle if we're going to get forward as people.
And Maurice Noah can argue with that.
I need to get to Arisha. And one of the things that I wanted to say was, all I have to do is look at my email and I can see the emails from Color of Change reaching out. But over the past couple of weeks, are you seeing people reaching in to Color of Change? Do you have the receipts that mirror what we're seeing in the street for the kind of activism that is going to be needed to carry more momentum?
We are definitely seeing an outpouring of energy. For example, Color of Change does not accept corporate donations. We do a lot of work around corporate accountability and corporate power. It's part of the leverage that we have in these sorts of conversations. And we saw this week a number of corporations dumping money to us and then announcing on social media that they'd given us money before we'd even accepted it. As someone that does a lot of corporate accountability work and is often in tough negotiations and conversations with folks around a range of different issues, it's wonderful to see a business community sort of say, we are trying to speak out. We're trying to say that this shouldn't be the status quo, that we don't think that this is normal or sustainable. But on the other hand, it's often triggering, I think, as Black people and as Black organizers who have been living through this for generations, to experience people just having a sense of awareness about the pain that we've been facing.
Mm-hmm. And what are your thoughts about the economic piece of some form of reparations for the Black community from your perspective? You know, what does that look like?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important. I hope it's one of the things that I see in my lifetime as an organizer. I do think it, I still think we have a ways to go. As I think about, as I imagine the reality of reparations for Black people, it's like we have to have the perfect setup. We have to get make the political reality true that will actually allow for that to happen, and up until which will take a while, which means, you know, not just a federal government, but having courts that will support some sort of, you know, radical move in this sort of way. And until that point, I still think that there's a lot more work to do, and it's work that's been going on, you know, for forever. To till the soil around culture change, around narrative change, around the importance of reparations, around how normalized reparations are across the globe and instances of injustice. And so we're gonna have to be very creative about how we continue to talk about reparations. When Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote his case for reparations, that was a piece of the step that brought more people into the fold. But we're going to have to have campaigns that push towards reparations, but that don't meet that like threshold that I think that we all want, which is like acknowledgement from the American government. You know, it might start with acknowledgement from a set of corporations who have benefited from slavery, it's a necessary change, and America is going to continue to see these sorts of outbursts until these sorts of economic disparities are resolved.
Dr. Frazier, let me ask you this, because one of the things that has been discussed a lot this week when we're talking about reparations or economic opportunities is defunding police departments and moving that money to economic opportunities for communities of color. Good idea, bad idea, non-starter, what do you think?
No, I think defunding the prison system, the prison industrial complex, and putting it into the Black community, I think it's a powerful idea. It should be defunded, right? So yes, that is one of the claws and the talons of the eagle that we must focus on. No question about that. Defunding of the prison industrial complex. I'm sure everybody on this town hall meeting has seen 13th, and we know how that has been so devastating to the economic upward mobility of Black people simply because of the focus on the Black male. So that's A. But Maurice and Michael also and Elise said, we must narrow focus on changing laws. We are a country of a rule of laws, and it's the systemic laws that help to oppress us. There's just no question about that. They are a big assist. So, and Dr. Claude Anderson talked about this 25 years ago. The first step on freedom, the first level of freedom is economics, and the second level of freedom is politics. You use your economics, you use your money to buy, rent, lease, right? Politicians, right? Politics is about money. It's about money. So yes, you must vote, but you must also fund your representatives. If you ask an honest politician whether they would prefer your money or your vote, they will tell you, I prefer your money. If I get your money, I can get the vote, right? So they have to be funded, and someone other than us, which does the majority of the funding of most of our Black politicians, including Barack Hussein Obama, who needed $1 billion, right, to become president of the United States. Him and Michelle did not have $1 billion. They were funded by the public and private sector, and of course, private funding. Now, our brothers and sisters in the gay and lesbian movement, very powerful, very organized, and very moneyed. We know that when Barack Hussein Obama went into the presidency, he was firmly against gay marriage. We know that. He sat in the congregation of Jeremiah Wright. He was against gay marriage. Our brothers in the gay and lesbian movement put millions of dollars into his campaign. Did they want something? Yes. Held to the yes, they wanted something for their enormous votes and their money. They wanted the right to be married. Mm-hmm. And Barack Hussein Obama got that law passed for them. Now, you think he did it just out of the goodness of his heart to change his own personal philosophy? No. That was funded by money. Money. So we must vote and we must invest in our politicians. And for that, we want something. We want a return on that investment. And when we invest in you, not only with our vote, but with our money, we will hold you accountable.